live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world, all the stations carrying us. We're going to be talking today about ways we can extend our lifespan, prevent disease, and understand that everything in life has a consequence, either positive or negative. Also, I'm going to be offering you an opportunity to call in. I'm not going to have a guest, so I have more time for your talkback, and I'll be giving you the concept of what I'd like to have you call in about in just a few moments. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, but then we're going to take on a brief commentary from Chris Hedges saying goodbye to planet Earth from TruthDig. I'm also going to share additional insights on why I believe that this is the best time to bring Ralph Nader back into our lives as an elder statesman who can give us his insights of how we can create third parties to represent all the people and not just the corporate interests that are dominant within the Democratic and Republican administrations. I also am going to talk about Nestle's, the world's largest food company, and how they're taking over our sparse water supplies in the United States, not benefiting the local residents, but certainly benefiting themselves. Also today, we're going to take a look at some school teachers, and then I'll ask you for feedback on that commentary. And you remember it was several years ago that I said our own research, original in-depth research, where we did a whole report showing that the reason that the CIA, the State Department, the Defense Department, Hillary Clinton, under oath, did not tell the truth. They lied. And they lied because Benghazi, the embassy there, was not attacked because it was just an American embassy. It was attacked because it was being used by Christopher Stevens, the ambassador, in a secret protocol to take Gaddafi's weapons and move them through the embassy out to Syria and to Turkey to then be turned over to terrorist groups that we were supporting, like al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, ISIS, and then to be used to unseat Assad. Well, we have some proof of that today, and we will be sharing that proof. So we have a lot to share. Also, time permitting, I have a lot of different commentaries here, including new information, just brand new, you have not heard or seen this anywhere else, about a new whistleblower has come forward to challenge the CDC on the use of the chickenpox vaccine. And you haven't heard of him ever. No one has. We have it. We will quote him. Now, this adds to Dr. William Thompson's testimony at the CDC when he was not aware he was being recorded by a scientist whose own son suffered from autism spectrum disorder. And that then embarrassed him to where he had to become a whistleblower, but he has never been invited to give testimony before Congress. This is one more deconstructing the myth. Now, let's put this in perspective according to Bonnie Faulkner's recent purge, and that's what she was. She was purged. Any reasonable person could have disagreed with the statements of her guest who was not being interviewed in live time where she could have challenged him, but rather he made a statement that is simply historically incorrect. And there are people arguing this both pro and con. But it is my belief that based upon 17 years of outstanding reporting, that there is no reason, good reason, to purge her and then purge all of her 17 years of award-winning shows. Well, that's like a Nazi book burning. But what's important to me is by taking that important voice of truth and reason in most cases, in this one I believe there was an error. But this is the same Bonnie Faulkner that invited me on her show for an hour on KPFA in Berkeley to offer evidence, hard scientific evidence, that would have allowed the citizens listening to it and journalists who might have picked it up and written about it, that what was being said by the legislators, including the chief doctor, medical doctor in California in the legislation, Dr. Pan, who was pro-vaccine, wanting mandatory vaccines, it would have at least allowed them, the audience, to know that there's two sides to this story. That was a close call. And the question is, if Bonnie Faulkner had not been censored that day, if I had not been censored on supposedly free speech radio, would the people of California voted differently? Today, there is mandatory vaccines, and I have a new report that you have not heard about. You'll hear it exclusively on our program. A new study has come out showing that since the mandatory vaccines in California, and you can bet that Alex, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that represents about 250 major corporations working in secret, working with state legislators for the past nearly 30 years to get bills that become laws in the states that benefit these corporations and not the consumers in that state, that they were behind this because they're trying to use the California laws for all 50 states. In any case, there's now a 17% increase in autism spectrum disorder since the legislation passed in California. So that's how serious that legislation was, and that's how serious the abrogation of real responsibility to carry views that are scientifically based. Now, I'm not afraid to debate. I've done hundreds of debates. But they are afraid to debate because I asked the program director, KPFA, bring on Dr. Pan, bring on any of these people. First, I'll show you how much money they actually receive from the very pharmaceutical companies whose vaccines they were going to mandate. Would the audience like to know who got the biggest amount of money, guess, and then pass the legislation? Well, that makes a difference in some people's minds. The audience would like to know, what is the science that challenges the safety and efficacy of any given vaccine, especially those being mandated, like the Gardasil vaccine, which is the most dangerous vaccine ever created. It's garbage. Everything about it's garbage. And all around the world, people are suffering. Children have died because of using it. But you wouldn't know that. The audience didn't know that because of the censorship. And that's why I'm asking you, boycott KPFA. Stop supporting it. In any case, I'm going to give you information to show you how utterly, completely corrupt the entire vaccine industry is. You'll hear about that today. So we have a lot to share, including on the environment. And I'm going to talk about a new study about some Arctic ground no longer freezing, even in the winter. Remember I said that our biggest concern right now, environmentally, is the melting of all that tundra under the Russian steppes, under the ground, going right up to the water, in very shallow water in Siberia. Well, that's a large body of water and landmass, and it's thawing, which also creates fires, peat fires. And you just can't put out a peat fire. It can go 20 feet, 30 feet down, and it spreads, and it burns almost like coal for a long period of time. Anyhow, I'm going to deal with all this. So you see, we have a lot to share. This ties in with epigenetics. We've been led to believe for decades that drinking is good for you. Not getting drunk. Everyone knows that's not good. But even light social drinking is bad. We've been told it's not. It is. The actual science shows that any alcohol is bad for you. Kills cells. Makes you very acidic. Creates pain. Kills brain cells, heart cells, kidney cells, and liver cells. And those cells frequently will become the weak link. Even if you stop drinking after college, by the time you're 40, your kidney, your liver, your brain, and heart have already suffered substantial and irreparable damage. If you stop smoking 20 years ago, the likelihood is you'll finally die of emphysema or some form of lung condition concomitant with that smoking earlier. And the reason is simple. We have yet scientifically and medically, it just does not exist anywhere in medicine, anywhere in science. This is the danger of monotheistic academia. It is limiting. It only limits to specializations, subcategories and sub-subcategories and specialties that allow you to know one small piece of a puzzle, but never pull back to see all the other integrated pieces. I'll give you an example. If there's a study showing that vitamin C will help reduce a particular type of cancer, which was done at a university, and it lessens the likelihood of that cancer and the spread of that cancer, then it's reasonable to assume that the underlying cause of that cancer is inflammation. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's glioblastoma, astrocytoma in the brain, lung cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, melanoma, skin cancer, stomach cancer, bladder cancer, they're all caused by inflammation. So therefore, if a vitamin C could make a difference with one type of cancer, isn't it reasonable then to say, well, all cancers have something in common, so why not assume that it would also be good for other cancers? And science and medicine say, nope. If you have 40 different cancers, actually there's more than 200, but if you had 40 different cancers in the body, before we would use vitamin C or anything else, you would have to have a study for every single one of those cancers. And it wouldn't matter if 99.99% of all cancers are shown to be benefited by vitamin C. That one study that wasn't done on that 0.01%, they would still say, well, there's no proof. That's how stubbornly resistant that medicine, all of medicine, and all of science is. As a scientist, both applied and basic sciences, as a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology, publishing articles, doing over 165 original studies, 40 original clinical studies, publishing in peer-reviewed journals, I can tell you it's rare that you ever at any conference meet scientists that have any interest in what you're doing if it's not directly tied into supporting their own thesis. That's the trouble. Monotheistic, single-mindedness. So if you think that science is going to come up with all these cures that it's been promising and getting over $1 trillion for, I would say don't hold your breath. What we need is we need a younger group of people who are going to medical school. And I know some are listening right now because I know their parents tell me, oh, my daughter's becoming a graduate from Columbia and in medicine. Think comprehensively. Think universally. Don't get caught up into a single specialty. Now, that said, here is epigenetics, and this rewrites how everyone should be treated and diagnosed. We believe that a disease is only real when it can be measured by some objective test. That if you cannot find it in a test, it doesn't exist. Therefore, you're in good health. And then, of course, the next week someone dies of a heart attack or stroke. But he just got a checkup and he found a good state of health. No, because once again, all of medicine and all of science refuses with such hubris and arrogance to acknowledge subclinical progression, meaning that before you see a tumor large enough to measure, you may have been cancering and producing that tumor for decades. And before you see scurvy, a classical sign of vitamin C deficiency, you may have seen people coming down with multiple colds, multiple flus, a weakened immune system, but not manifesting classical symptoms. So we need to completely throw out all of the ideas that a disease only manifests when you're able to measure it and start looking at that everything in life is epigenetic. Everything, every thought, every action, every food, every beverage, every breath you take, every interaction you have is either constructive or destructive. There is no neutral in this, none. And by that, we end up doing some things right and some things wrong. And then there's whatever is the dominant energy collapses the other positive results, and then we end up with a negative outcome. So just keep that in mind. The fact that you can eat a hamburger, a pizza, a hot dog, you can smoke a cigarette, you can smoke a joint, You can drink alcohol today and tomorrow you wake up and feel okay. Doesn't mean you are. It means that you have one tiny bit of an accumulation of the negative impact of what you've just done. Now, when you've smoked your 10,000 cigarette or drank your 700 quart of alcohol or eaten your 12,000 hamburger, and then suddenly, oh my goodness, you have breast cancer, you have prostate cancer, you have liver disease, you have non-fatty liver disease, then it's already too late. So just be aware, every single action has a reaction. That said, then this early life alcohol intake study that increases the risk of high-grade prostate cancer from the University of North Carolina makes sense. Here's the bottom line. Compared to non-drinkers, men who consumed at least 7 drinks a week during adolescence, let's say 15 to 19, had a 300% odds of being diagnosed with clinically significant prostate cancer. Now remember, the prostate is the organ that grows rapidly during puberty. And so it's potentially more susceptible to having a problem. And that's why we should pay careful attention to this. Now, also, I want to go through, interrelate this, because if you want to build your immune system, there's two things you have to do. It's like freedom. I see so many people who are absolutely correct when they say we should be free to live our lives in a responsible, moral, and ethical manner. Who would say no to that? But that doesn't work in and of itself unless you have the precursor to it, the foundational structure. And that is, how can you make consistently good choices, healthy choices, positive choices, happy choices, spiritual choices, if your basic input, the information that you have either intentionally gained yourself or has been given to you by others or what you were raised in, the epigenetics, if there are flaws in it? So you have to be free from your conditioned self in order to be free for your authentic self. And that said, I want to bring a concept in, and this is our first call-in. I'd like to hear from you. And it deals with something that Socrates and Plato and certainly Aristotle, they said there's a consequence to our thoughts. And they didn't have to have the science to prove this. And one of the most important thoughts that we could all benefit from is the notion of the hedonism that goes today. Back then, it was not called hedonism. It was hedonic, H-E-D-O-N-I-C. And that meant that you were interested in only what gave you pleasure. Now, think today, the persons like the Cardassians, where first they yell and scream and curse at each other, demean each other in the most vile language imaginable, all the while the mother is sitting there listening to this going, oh, oh, and they're screaming at each other. And you think, wow, this is the new norm? Now, mind you, people who tune in are taking this in as if this were somehow a normal way to communicate inside of a family dynamic. And then what are they arguing about? Someone not being at a film shoot? What is the purpose of that film shoot? Is the world a better place because of your hedonic interest? No, it's not. It just means that you in that moment are considered important in someone else's life by what you buy, how much you can consume, how much it costs, the fact you can fly on private jets, the fact that you can wear animal skins or fur, the fact that you can eat anything you want, wherever you want, and if you don't like the consequences, you can go get liposuction or some other cosmetic procedure. Everything on reality television today, everything is purely hedonic. It serves only the interest of that individual and no one else. Now, I'm a believer in a different construct, one that some of you may be aware of. It is called eudaimonic. E-U-D-E-M-O-N-I-C. What's that mean? It means pleasure with purpose, pleasure with service, that whatever you're doing, the world is a better place because of it. You're a better person because of it. It does not deny your ability to have pleasure. It simply says that my pleasure is a pleasure that does not lower my morals, doesn't lower my character values, doesn't lower my spiritual connectivity, doesn't lower my respect for the environment. Because if you're living through the eudaimonic construct, you're not flying in private jets. Because how could you care about the environment knowing that you're contributing to it? How could you sit down and eat a steak knowing the animal suffered, the environment suffered? There's phosphate now in the water systems. They're creating then dead zones, which are killing porpoises and other creatures that require oxygen, and there's no oxygen, algae blooms. There's a chain reaction, a rippling effect, every bad choice. And so are we purely hedonic, or are we not? Look at our society. Look at the politicians. Look at the media celebrities. Look at what they're offering us. Look at the medical community. Look at the careerist, where the average length of a medical visit today is 7 minutes. 7 minutes. Now, try to explain to the doctor that you're interested, having done your own homework, in a different approach, and see how quickly you're interrupted, corrected, and admonished. That is the hedonics of a careerist in a profession that is also proving day by day in the amount they charge, knowing full well you don't have the insurance and you could go bankrupt in a procedure that you may not need, even could be dangerous to you. That's hedonic in medicine. But I could show you hedonics in agriculture, in energy, in finance, in education. So we have to pull back and see that we are all interconnected by those who are purely hedonic. They seek pleasure without purpose. Pleasure for themselves. That pleasure may be gaining money, gaining career, gaining success, gaining adulation. Do you want to see a group of mindless narcissists? Watch for 5 minutes one of the award shows, whether it's the Academy Awards, all fake, or the MTV Awards, all stupid. But they will spend thousands of dollars on a dress or an outfit to let people know they're a somebody because they can afford to dress differently. At what point are we going to stop and take an honest, measured look and then ask ourselves, what happens when we live this way? Well, we get sick, physically sick, mentally sick, societally sick, environmentally sick. It all is connected. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear from you now. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, a couple other things I'm going to share with you now before we take a break, and you can call in. This is from Kate Raines and Barbara Fisher. I have a lot of respect for both people from Vaccine Reaction. And they're talking about the varicella zoster, that's the chickenpox virus, and how I know where I came from in a small community in West Virginia. When someone had chickenpox, so the measles, our mothers would take us all over and we'd have a chickenpox party. And sure enough, we'd all get chickenpox or the measles, and it was short-lived, and they'd give us different baths, and it'd be gone, and then we'd have immunity for life. But then the vaccine makers, who found that they were no longer legally culpable, so even if their vaccines were dangerous, they couldn't be sued. That was purely a political ploy. And that's why it should be reversed. Then along comes the CDC, and they start lying about the dangers of the vaccine and the fact that it does not give permanent immunity. In fact, if you've had the vaccine as an adult, if you get chickenpox, it's much more deadly. So here is someone that is important that you know exists, and this is a new whistleblower, and here's what he has to say, and I'll point this out to you. And by the way, he is Dr. Gary S. Goldman. He served for 8 years from January 1995 until his resignation in October 2002 as research analyst for the Varicella Active Surveillance Project in a cooperative project with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And Goldman was hired by Vestech, V-E-S-T-E-X, Human Resource Systems, to conduct studies on the impact of the universal varicella vaccine on California's Antelope Valley region and on the people there. And under the auspices of the Los Angeles Department of Health's Acute Communicable Disease Control Unit and the CDC's funded Antelope Valley Varicella Active Surveillance Project, he was charged with monitoring the effects of the chickenpox vaccine program. And when Dr. Goldman was prevented from publishing findings about the negative effects of the universal use of the varicella zoster vaccine by children, he resigned in protest. Here's what his resignation letter says. I'm reading it verbatim. Quote, "When research data concerning a vaccine used in human populations is being suppressed and or misrepresented, this is very disturbing and goes against all scientific norms and compromises professional ethics." Now, in 2005, Dr. Goldman published a paper giving evidence for the fact that the shingles is suppressed naturally in the human populations by repeated exposure to natural chickenpox, which provides protective asymptomatic boosting. He predicted that widespread chickenpox vaccination would lead to a loss of natural immunity and a spike in the incidence of shingles among adults. He noted that the pharmacological industry's exception was to, or expectation was to, offset the decrease in circulating chickenpox by vaccinating against shingles. And so this is what he found, that we didn't need the chickenpox vaccine. And he found out that there was a big spike in people getting shingles later in life who got the chickenpox vaccine. And, quote, he describes a deliberate, quote, attempt to quash the unwanted outcomes in the years following 2000, meaning they were covering it up. And according to Dr. Goldman, among the many ways the CDC officials were able to distort varicella data, including averaging rates of chickenpox over years instead of stratifying by year, this had the effect of increasing the apparent impact of the vaccine before it really could have affected incidence in the community and masking the decline. What that means is that if you do a mathematical model having nothing to do with reality, you don't know if a vaccine is working or not. You're merely projecting it. And then it's all based upon a false notion, because this is how they manipulate the data. And they do it all the time. So that's one way. And then also, quote, combining the instance of childhood shingles without differentiating between those who had had natural chickenpox and those who had been vaccinated. This would effectively obscure both the increasing rate of shingles and the importance of asymptomatic immunity boost gained by re-exposure to wild-type chickenpox virus that prevents shingles. And directing Goldman to stop his pursuit of shingles trends and further prohibiting him from publishing his findings in a written directive from the County of Los Angeles Legal Department, which is included in the 2018 article, Goldman was told to, quote, cease and desist in your efforts to publish or disseminate any information gathered as part of your participation in this research program. He said that they were choosing poorly designed studies to support conclusions, actively seeking to discredit Goldman and his research, and misleading the public by maintaining the chickenpox vaccine would be inexpensive, would confer lifelong immunity, and there was no immunological link with shingles, all of which were lies. So, and here is his conclusion. He concluded, quote, a combination of financial conflicts of interest, lack of proper controls, poor methodology, and the varicella studies commissioned by the CDC often yielded improper or confounded results and conclusions, producing research based upon pseudoscience that should more appropriately be relegated to a faith-based belief system than the realms of science. So now we have another person to confer even more evidence that the vaccine field is rife with pseudoscience, poorly designed studies, and the enormous profit motive behind it. And that's the deal. And I wished I would have had a chance to have challenged Dr. Pam and the other pro-vaccine legislators, all of whom received money from the vaccine makers, but KPFA censored, banned Bonnie Faulkner and myself. And if anyone thinks that Bonnie Faulkner was taken off the air and 17 years of her shows completely purged because of this one mistake, which some are saying is a mistake, others are not. I say it was a mistake, but a mistake that by simply acknowledging it and acknowledging that the best that we can find at this moment, and we looked at every historical analysis of the number of people who died in the camps or released after the war from the camps is far more than 300,000, and that this 6 million figure is probably correct. But that doesn't mean that she is a Holocaust denier. It just means that there is a different interpretation of different types of reality for which she has a right, in which case then she would also have the right to debate those who believe that before you have a guest on there who makes such statements, look at their source material. Just a thought. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to open it up for calls, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. We'll be back in a moment. I'd like to invite you to call in now and share your points of view and on our talkback segment, 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about what you'd like to do, I'm going to share some additional information on the environment. In fact, what they have found now is that there's a clue that the frozen land might be thawing faster than expected. Dr. Zimov has spent years running a research station that tracks climate change in the rapidly warming Russian Far East. So when students probed the ground and took soil samples amid the mossy and larch forest there, 200 miles northeast of the Arctic Circle, they suspected something wasn't right. And what they found was they were measuring the permafrost levels and they were substantially different, meaning they were thawing, and they were thawing heavily. And so that really scared them. And so now what they're saying is the land is thawing faster than what anyone had ever thought. So that's important. Also, one more thing on the environment. Remember a couple weeks ago I did an original in-depth investigative report on fluoride, all scientifically based. And I did the first part, and you could read the whole article. This is just in, and it's big news. Fluoride in water called mass medication by the New Zealand Supreme Court. Quote, water fluoridation in public drinking water has been a controversial subject for decades. Now, finally, a High Court New Zealand has ruled that fluoride in water is like adding unwanted medication to the public water supply. And then it goes on to talk about how the majority of the judges agreed that it is difficult to avoid fluoride in drinking water, further bolstering their decision against it. Although some of the judges say the science on the matter isn't settled, Chief Justice Sion Elias said fluoridation is unlawful. And the majority of the New Zealand Supreme Court ruled that putting fluoride in water amounts to applying a medical treatment without the consent by the general public. The court further stated that information reports saying water fluoridation measurably reduces tooth decay without health risk is, quote, misinformation. And it's widely accepted that any possible fluoride benefits only come from topical use. Simply put, there's no good scientifically valid reason to swallow this poison. So, all of you who care about your health should read the article and share it with people. Also, this is another report, and this is from National Geographic and from Craig Welch. And it says, quote, some Arctic ground no longer freezing even in the winter. New data from two Arctic sites suggests some surface layers are no longer freezing. If that continues, greenhouse gases from permafrost could accelerate climate change. That's another study on this very topic. So that's important. Again, when that permafrost, you're going to have a huge amount of methane going in, and you're going to see global warming go up real fast, real quick. Here's another thing. This is from the Stockholm Resilience Center. Earth at risk of heading towards a hothouse Earth state. Quote, keeping global warming within 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius may be more difficult than previously assessed. An international team of scientists has published a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science showing that even if the carbon emissions reductions called for in the Paris Agreement are met, there's a risk of Earth entering what he called the hothouse Earth. Conditions of hot Earth's climate will be the long-term, could go up to 4 to 5 degrees Celsius. And that would mean you're not going to be able to grow food in most of the world. Now, I don't want to put the idea that everything is catastrophic. What I'm suggesting is this. You don't just have a complete economic collapse. People have diversified holdings. They have their property owned. They will be able to live through that if there's an economic collapse. But not everybody is going to collapse. Probably about two-thirds of the American population would find themselves in deep, deep debt and without the resources to even feed themselves. Homelessness would exponentially accelerate to where you could have 100 million people homeless. That's minor compared to what happens if we hit that 2 degrees Celsius, which we're going to in the very near future, and then large sections of America are simply uninhabitable. It's just too hot. You couldn't go outside. But then the very fact you're using all the air conditioning increases the global heat factor. So you're going to have at least 20 states that are going to be too hot, too arid for sustainable living. People are not going to want to live there. And then you're going to have real estate collapse. So you're going to see hundreds of billions of dollars per state in the loss of income value in properties, which means your government's local government's going to collapse. The state governments are going to be collapsed unless they're bailed out by the federal government. So at that point, we're just going to be like Zimbabwe. We're just going to be printing money at an astronomical inflation level because no one's acknowledging the problem and no one anywhere in the United States in official position is doing a damn thing about it. So I'm suggesting, rather than wait to get slammed by environmental disaster or by economic problems, be far more prudent in looking at your future and make moves when you have the time and you can select the resources to help you in that move. Now, I mentioned something about Ralph Nader in my open letter to Michael Moore, which I put online. And it's a friendly letter to Michael. I've known Michael for 30 years. And in fact, many of you remember Michael would come to the premieres. He was at the premiere of Gulf War Syndrome down at the AMC Theater. And we talk any time that we're both in town and come together. So it was a way of asking Michael to take a more thorough look at what Ralph Nader represented and now forgotten and betrayed by the left, and bring him back so that he could nurture and work with young, idealist, and uncompromised yet millennials into forming new third parties where foundational issues could be put into motion. And since Nader's accomplished a lot, and he was a supporter of the three branches of government, his policies would still have to get through Congress, and Nader would never want to take dictatorial powers like a Trump nor anyone else. Trump's taken dictatorial powers. Obama did the same thing, but with a panache and a kind of a niceness, like a feel-good quality. And so to use the public airwaves to institute real debate on the issues is what we should be doing. So act, voter access, get rid of war on drugs, incarceration policies, this would all change under the programs Nader has suggested. For example, look at all the currently illegal drugs. We should have no war on drugs. Nader would help with that. We should put corporate crimes to the task of saying you are guilty of a white-collar crime, you should be doing time, or you should sacrifice your assets, ill-gotten gains. For banks, they should not be able to hold money they've made illegally. And pharmaceutical companies, they should lose their charter, go out of business. And Wall Street speculation should be completely denied. And we shouldn't allow trading in derivatives or credit default swaps or naked shorts. Nader would go after pesticides and toxic waste dumping. And he would do what he could when it comes to the fossil fuel industries, the chemical industries, to try to create another workforce when these people no longer have jobs so that they wouldn't be unemployed. So all this is important. And we need a national health care program, universal care. He would do that. We need to have the police working from a community who actually live in that same community. So these are their neighbors. And they should be demilitarized. They should be able to walk the streets and speak with the people and see what needs to be done at the local level. And he would do that. We need to reduce our defense budget by 80%. He has the courage to do that and not care what the lobbyists and the strong-arming tactics of all the different contractors would do. He believes in public lands and public airwaves and taxpayer-funded science and technology, which is not all at the proprietary. He would go after the Koch brothers and Alex and influence over Washington. And he would reverse corporate exploitation wherever possible, at least bring it to our attention. And he would also protect the Native Americans and their sovereignty. So those are just some of the reasons why I believe that we should have a council of elders bringing some of the greatest minds from the past together so they could use their tremendous integrity and their wisdom to help create platforms that are important going forward, but also telling the younger people the reality of the world they live in and that you have to be in these areas at the local level and expect a long fight. That said, I'm now going to take some calls. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Well, I'd like to talk about slowing climate that's what I call now climate catastrophe. And one way is to legalize hemp and turning to hemp-based products. Hemp doesn't require fertilizers, herbicides, fungicides, fumicides to grow. And, of course, you know, those fertilizers run off into our rivers, causing toxic algae bloom and killing millions of fish. We could use the hemp seed, as you mentioned many times, for nutritious products and a variety of things. If you go online to Google, you can order, you can order products that are made from hemp. And Amazon, you know, they make millions of boxes. You know, they can make that out of hemp material. Hemp is, instead of using forest products, and hemp is highly, highly recyclable. Even hemp straws, you know, we have in all this plastic, they can make sort of a biodegradable plastic out of hemp. And one of the, you can look up hemp straws on Google, it's there. Hemp toilet paper, I mean, we're ripping down our forest to make toilet paper. What about all the animals? We don't think about them. Hemp paper towels, hemp fiber newspapers, disposable hemp packaging, paper cups, cloth, hemp. They can make hemp as rough as burlap and as smooth as silk. And I suggest that and because they don't use pesticides, fungicides, fumicides to make it, it's far safer than cotton and building materials. I mean, the list goes on. Hemp, no wonder they made it illegal. It infringes on so many corporations, including all the chemical companies that make all the pesticides, fungicides, fumicides, and fertilizers that grow products. So I think that's the way to go. It's one way, and it really is. It's a renewable crop. We can slow down the vicious tearing down of our forests, the clear cutting, and replant our forests. But hemp, and especially in commercial crops, there, so we can use these the hemp based miracle. It's a miracle crop, as far as I'm concerned. It covers so many areas, and I'm calling on the development of hemp products by all those out there who are looking for new venues for commercial for starting a company. Hemp is the future of America, and it will help to slow global warming, and everything I'm saying can be found on Google.
Okay, Harvey, you've made a lot of important points, and I thank you for calling in and sharing that. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to write up a report on why we need hemp. But then I would like the citizen journalists in this audience to write up a report why it's not going to happen in the near future because of those who would lose money and lose their control over industries if hemp were made doable. It's just like the alcohol industry has been one of the biggest suppressors of marijuana and the cannabinoid research. And as of other pharmaceutical companies, they don't want a product that can reverse pain that's not a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory they control the market for. So we have to be realistic. Remember I said earlier in the program, you have to be free from something in order to truly be free for something. It's a two-step process. Doing either one keeps you in a limbo with the kind of ethereal projection of hope, but also the conundrum of saying, well, I have all these great ideas. Why am I not doing them? Because you're not free yet. So let's put those two together, and I'll print up on our website. And our website is really well read, your article. All right, Harvey? Fair enough. Let's say hello to Robert from New York City or New York. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
You mentioned earlier about damage you do when you're younger, drinking, smoking, whatever the case is. And I'm curious, I know you advocate fruits, vegetables, you know, some supplements and vegetarian veganism if possible. You know, what other kinds of things can you do to kind of reverse maybe some of those damages that you've done now that you've smartened up and realized the damage you've done and try to reverse some of that or at least make some good faith efforts to correct some of that.
Okay, Robert, I would look at it a little differently and see if this makes sense to you. If it's reasonable, use it. If it's not, don't. In my experience, counseling almost 70,000 plus people, I have found that those people who make quantum changes have quantum results, and therefore damage, including substantial damage done earlier in life, are able to be reversed. And that's why we've had a lot of the success. I find that people who are going to have a little effort don't have the sustainable improvements. They may lose some weight, on a particular diet, they may feel a little better. Their mitochondria are being rebuilt a little bit. But you have to understand the equation. By the time you find that you're sick or that a system is failing, you're already past 50% towards the death process or the loss of health process. If ideal health is 1 and death is 100, we can abuse ourselves over decades until we get to a 50 or more. And by the time, oh my goodness, you have a disease, we could be well up over 60%. If you had a perfect diet, perfect exercise, perfect stress management, perfect supplementation, cleaning up your environment, you're at 50%. So what is important to understand is that the current models that are used are palliatory. They are not, they're not going to change the systemic outcomes. So you have to do everything. Now, this is a hard one to process for most people because it requires fundamental change. And that's what people abhor. They don't want to change. They want to see others change. They want to be a passive spectator to the change in society, but they will resist every effort possible, giving every excuse imaginable not to change. So what we have to do is we have to do that other 50%, and that is, that brings in things that are considered subjective or non-linear, such as spiritual and the deep emotional transformative processes and energies. That's the energy exchange. But that's where real change occurs. Can you change the disease body to a wellness body? Yes, you can do that, but not incrementally. I've never seen it done incrementally. I haven't. Maybe others have. And I haven't seen it in my family, my friends, or anyone else. But have I seen quantitative changes? The answer is absolutely. And a lot of people in this audience who've come to retreats or come to workshops have also seen it. And it sustains itself. But that's more than, well, give me a vitamin for my heart. Okay, I can give you a vitamin for your heart, coenzyme Q10. Now ask me, is that going to reverse the occlusion that can occur? Is that going to thin your blood to prevent a stroke or heart attack? Is that going to repair the damage to the epithelia of your linings? No, it'll have some benefit for improving mitochondrial function of the heart muscle itself, which uses more energy than other organ of the body, but it's not going to reverse heart disease. Now, if you want to really have a healthy heart, you got to do a whole lot. You got to stop a lot, and you got to do a lot. That's a freedom from a bad diet, bad thinking, bad sleeping, bad relationships, bad working environment, high levels of stress, because that cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, when it gets elevated from stress, that actually destroys the heart and heart tissue. So if you leave the stress management out, you've just left a lot of what's necessary to help the heart. So we are monotheistic as an entire society. We live a certain way. We want certainty in our lives. And certainty comes from believing in only one thing at the exclusion of anything else. So those people are saying the only way we can, you know, attack fascism is to attack the fascist. Well, then you're supporting fascism, a different name, and then try to explain to that person that we don't impress the world on our capacity for making positive change by using negative tools. Okay? Now explain to someone that if you don't want the world to overheat where it will not be hospitable to you or even sustainable, you personally have to do something. And then suddenly the person says, what do you mean? Well, you have to stop buying all the crap that you have that's worthless anyhow, and you have to stop eating this kind of diet that supports the monoculture of factory farming. And suddenly their eyes turn red, their head explodes, and they ooze out a kind of a vacuous emptiness of meaning. They're not going to do anything. If anything, they're going to double down, and people do just, we're eating more meat this year than ever before, drinking more alcohol than ever before, using more drugs than ever before, more medications than ever before. So with all the knowledge and all the information, we don't need any more knowledge. We have enough. They had enough 2,000 years ago. Do you really know someone who was smarter than Maimonides? I don't. Do you have anyone who is a more pragmatic thinker than Aristotle. I don't. All we have are people who can mimic some of what they do, or if you're one of the new agey wagies, you can steal some of their stuff and call it your own without ever having to have an original thought and then just mastering your personality to get people to believe in you, and that's a whole lot of the new agies. So we think that our answers to everything is in the new technologies. That's what the left believes. Well, we just need more science. No. The science we have has put us in no small measure in the place we're at where we believe that we never have to question what the environmental costs are for all the things we've invented and are using. As long as we have a problem, science will figure it out. I don't have to make change. So begging the question of your question is, and not rhetorically, but are you capable of making every change needed in your life, no matter what the consequences, to your friends, family, your financial security? If the answer is yes, then yeah, you could change almost anything. If the answer is no, then it's not going to work, in my opinion. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely, and it's a very deep thought for me to end with.
Okay, thank you, Robert. I appreciate your call. In fact, I appreciate all the people watching. I take nothing for granted, and as you can see each day when you come here, we try to share brand new information, cutting-edge information, and insights that go beyond identity politics, which I loathe. I believe that in this world, the moment you start believing that somehow you are better or more entitled to something because of your background or who you are, you've just dissolved that capacity to integrate, harmonize, and change for the benefit of everyone. We've got to get out of this left-right, good-bad commentary that we're engaged in. Start looking at all of us connected and looking for the sacred in all of us. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day, everyone. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.
They do.